Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Hey friends, we're in for a treat today. We've got Dr. Lee Merritt with us, the medical rebel. I've talked to her, it's been several years, but before we get to the podcast info and the content, let's talk about a few people who've sent in donations. And want to thank you, Carol from Madisonville, Tennessee, Patrick from Danbury, Connecticut, Joe from Green Bay, Wisconsin, Bud from Fairborn, Ohio. And also shouting out again to Steve in New Mexico, Peggy, Minnesota, Pamela from Michigan, and on. But thank you, guys. We're doing our little mini fundraiser here in the spring. We have an opportunity to expand our reach with the help of Pioneer Network, Beck TV, and God's Learning Channel. So if you've not already donated to Worldview Matters and you are able, we're just asking if you'll consider helping with production costs for the next 6 months and allow us to get airtime on these three networks. If, for example, you can give a one-time gift of $200 or a recurring $25 a month. If you do that, we'd be blessed to send you a brand new book from Alex Newman, his latest book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, autographed, by the way, or your choice. You can get my new book, Assault on the Image of God. First-time donors will get this handy mug. Do not put it in the dishwasher. We learned the hard way. It's got Worldview Matters on one side and Keep Speaking the Truth About Things That Matter. That's my tagline on the other side. So go to worldviewmatters.tv. And it is tax deductible. Thank you. So Dr. Lee Merritt, it's great to have her back. Began her medical career at the age of four, believe it or not. How? Well, she was helping her dad. She was carrying her father's black bag on house calls when he did those back in Iowa. She graduated from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry in New York. She completed an orthopedic surgery residency in the U.S. Navy, served over 10 years as a Navy physician and surgeon. 1989, she was the only woman to be appointed at the Lewis A. Goldstein Fellow of Spinal Surgery at the University of Rochester Strong Memorial Hospital. So she's been in private practice of orthopedic and spinal surgery for nearly 30 years. She's the website, by the way, is drleemerritt.com or themedicalrebel.com, themedicalrebel or drleemerritt.com. Also, she was on the board of directors for Arizona Medical Association and is the past president of Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. There's so much more. She's been on Stossel. She spoke out on Obamacare. She became a medical rebel after realizing that the honorable practice of medicine had been perverted to serve a technocracy whose goal is not wellness, but enslavement. We're going to have her explain that to us a little bit. She's one of America's frontline doctors, and she had a viral speech on the myth of masks, and that led her to be, well, an investigation of her by the Iowa Board of Medicine and so much more. Dr. Lee Merritt, we just got to get to you and start talking about these things. Welcome to Worldview Matters.
No, thanks very much. Thanks for having me back.
So a little bit of history. We spoke on the radio a couple of years ago, but we met in 2020, I believe, in either Dallas, Texas, or Edmond, Oklahoma, at a Liberty Pastors Conference. I love those men and women of God. Paul Blair, Dran Reese, Alex Newman, Steve Smotherman, go on down the list. But let's start with what we were talking about right before we got on the show. You mentioned the history of vaccines and how doctors, true doctors, and you don't have to use air quotes, doctors in like the 1800s, 1900s, they were concerned about the efficacy of vaccines. Share a little bit about that before we jump into recent years.
Well, right, because we're always told, well, you know, you people that don't believe in vaccines, you must agree that polio vaccine and smallpox vaccine saved the world, right? Well, no, it actually didn't. And the problem we have now is the entire population of physicians has never lived in a world where people weren't routinely getting vaccines. So they don't know what an unvaccinated population looks like. Hmm. But they did back in 1789 when Jenner tried to hornswoggle us about the smallpox inoculation. And it turns out that that's a complete lie from the beginning to the end, which I'm making an entire video about. But in short, the doctors back then, and these were actually the university doctors, they recognized what was was going on, they saw the patterns because there was such a difference between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Even Edward Jenner's own son died of tuberculosis years after the vaccine. So did his first patient that he made the case for doing this with, died of tuberculosis. And the three things that, the doctors of the day, through the 1800s, until we get, in fact, up until the time really of the 20th century when it got kind of buried, they complained that they could see a clear association with cancer. Cancer was a rare disease back then with no vaccines. They could see a clear association with heart disease and with pulmonary disease. So back in the day, what they saw as phthisis or pneumococcal pneumonia. They didn't know it was pneumococcus, but they knew it was like a bacterial pneumonia. And they knew about tuberculosis. So they knew that, but they weren't that common. They would happen, but they could see that the rate was going up in people that were taking these crude new vaccines. So they tried to warn about it. And like I say, you know, today's world, it's the university doctors that was pushing the vaccine. It were people like me out in the periphery that weren't in the system that were saying, no, no, wait, stop. It was just the other way around back then. And Edward Jenner in 1789, or roughly 1789, he was paid $150,000 by the British government for his vaccine pushing program. And got other doctors involved. That's a lot of money back in those days. That's a lot
of
money.
By the way, so you talked about doctors back then. It seems like there's a big gap between then and what we have today with all the misinformation, with big pharma, with all the money that's behind what they do or don't do in certain hospitals or medical systems. But you obviously have a show. I want to make sure people realize this. Merit Medical Hour. It's over on Brighteon TV. That's Merit Medical Hour. And one thing I wanted to ask you, I checked out some of the recent shows, Dr. Lee Merritt, and I love the one with Dr. Renata Moon. And I want you to respond to this because we're talking about med school now and how they train doctors today. Dr. Renata Moon said today's med students in the U.S. feel like they're walking on eggshells because they cannot question anything. And boy, we've seen a lot of that since COVID, right? These poor students have lost all debate and discussion. And for people that don't realize this, this is going on in the top medical schools. Just share, I mean, the conversation went a lot further, but share your concerns about that because these are the kids now. We can call them kids because we're older. They're coming out of the medical schools and you're going, wait a minute, they weren't even allowed to give their opinion or oppose something. And it seems like that's what science is really about.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm the third or fourth generation doctors in my family. And I will say, and both my father and I graduated from the University of Rochester, and it was famous, and it still is probably, for basic physiology. We were taught back then to think. We were taught to say, you know, if it doesn't make sense with the way you understand the human body to work, then don't jump on this new bandwagon, whatever it is. In fact, in 1976, my professor of pediatrics said, essentially, he said, you know, it isn't childhood vaccines. He thought that was going to be a flash in the pan. He said childhood vaccines haven't decreased mortality from these diseases. What's done that is plumbers. And I just thought it was such a funny line that I remembered it. But his point was it was sanitation and better nutrition. And we were taught to think about the body processes. Now they're taught algorithms. And although we did see it somewhat in the time of the pandemic of 1918, which I have a big research article about that's on my website about what that was really all about. It wasn't a pandemic either. It was stage one trial of what we saw in COVID. We've been pressured to say things that weren't true in public medicine before, but it's never been so effective. Now, and one of the things, like she was talking about the fact that it's not just about even medicine stuff. It's about the transgender push. It's about all sorts of different things. And if you speak out, if you don't do the socially politically correct party line, you can get thrown out of medical school and or relegated to not getting your residency or not, you know, these are all things that you spend your whole life doing. I mean, not to mention the fact that these poor kids, I feel so bad for the students that had to get the vaccine just to stay in school. Yeah. You know, think about 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, 5 years of a general surgery residency, 2 years of a fellowship. And in the last year, they tell you, oh, you got to take the vaccine or we're going to get rid of you. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
You know, that is the worst form of evil coercion you can amount to. And it completely goes against the principles of Hippocratic medicine that we were taught. And that's kind of interesting. I'll just make that point, is that I went back and looked at the old Hippocratic Oath before they started writing their own oaths and making this all nonsense. And in the original Hippocratic Oath that I took, and this is from the one that was translated from the Greek in the 1840s, it actually says, I will not poison anyone and I will not be paid to poison anyone.
Oh my
what did
goodness.
Hippocrates know? Yeah, I'd kind of forgotten that part because I thought it was so irrelevant to what I was going to be doing in medicine. But it turned out to be the relevant point. It said, I will go into the house only for the interest of the patient and in nobody else's interest. And I remember thinking in 1980, who else's interest would I go into? And now I know, oh, big pharma, the government, yeah. You're the relative that might want to kill you, and et cetera. But the point is that we, you know, now apparently, and Hippocrates was a real guy. He's not just a myth. He was, Aristotle spoke about him. He must have known back in those days that doctors were the most competently trained to then use poisons. So they were actually being hired as poisoners. Today, we call them bioweaponeers.
Wow. And that could be a whole nother show right there how they used certain things. And we know the vax was one of them as a bioweapon. But you said something very important. You said we were taught to think back then. And how today, and before we got on the show, we had a conversation, and you mentioned this fog that it seems like it's just throughout society and maybe throughout the world, but in America, where at least kids are not today being taught how to think, they're taught what to think. We're in a very dangerous place historically, aren't we?
Oh, it's very dangerous. And it's basically, we're in a huge intelligence war. I mean, when we talked, I think the very first time, probably 3 years ago, I still thought this was, you know, it was propaganda in the sense it was just about this one issue. But now I realize this is a huge multi-generational war, and this is the climax. I think we're at the point, this is a huge war, not just against me and you and Americans and maybe some other people. This is a war for humanity, and it has to do with us believing in medical treatments, because, you know, they couldn't come at Americans, for example, by taking away our Second Amendment rights. They knew we'd stand up for that. Mm-hmm. They really couldn't go after, you know, they're trying to do the cashless society. And I see people standing up against that. I mean, we're kind of tough. We don't want to give away our land and do a lot of things that people want us to do. But the one thing that people will succumb to is this fear of disease. And I will just say that one of the things I've learned through these 3 years, and that I'm making a big point to go around and speak about now, is this, I call it the disease delusion. And what we've been told about disease, what makes you sick, it's been a complete lie. And I'll just tell you one little evidence point there. I discovered that all of medical and scientific publishing, with rare outliers like the Journal of the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Anyway, with rare exception, all of medical and scientific publishing is owned by the intelligence services.
Hmm.
In fact, the very first one of the, after World War II, they combined and made this huge publishing house. And just ask yourself, why is scientific papers being published by the CIA, MI6, Mossad, etc.? I mean, why would they be involved? They put together to make the largest publishing house in the world for medicine and science. They put together this thing in England, and they called it, since you're a Bible scholar that I am not, but I learned this from a theologian, they called it the Pergamon Press. Now, what's Pergamon? It's the altar of sacrifice in old Anatolia that in Revelation is called the seat of Satan. Why would you name that your press? Okay.
Exactly.
And who was the first editor-in-chief? Not a scientist, not a physician. It was Robert Maxwell. Ghislaine Maxwell's father, he was an agent for the British against the Germans, a spy. He was a Mossad agent, because he's buried on the Mount of Olives. He was rumored to be a KGB agent, and we know he's associated with Ghislaine Maxwell, consort of Jeffrey Epstein, so he's a CIA. He was intelligence royalty, and yet he is the editor-in-chief of the largest medical scientific publishing house in the world. That's just a little flavor of how they did this.
Wow. I know this is multifaceted too, but this is a key part in this. And by the way, the people that used to say it's conspiracy theory, we're being proved true. And I think you've probably been justified throughout the last couple of years too, and some of the stuff that you had talked about on your podcast and in other interviews. But we've got to take a brief pause where Dr. Lee Merritt, and the website is drleemerritt.com or themedicalrebel.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple articles, one that she wrote and another one over at the New American. When they rolled out the vaccines, along with government and corporate mandates, with the help of Big Pharma and Hollywood and the media and everybody else, there were spikes in mortality and excess deaths that started increasing dramatically that we hadn't seen before in America in 2021, 2022, 2023. Was it coincidental? I'm going to ask her when we come back in just a minute on Worldview Matters.
Today's show is brought to you by Harbingers Daily, world news biblically understood. Stay informed at harbingersdaily.com.
So if you're interested in supporting or sponsoring Worldview Matters, send us an email, worldviewmatters@fpeusa.org, and our producer will get right back to you. And we love our sponsors, Harbingers Daily, Patriot Mobile, and back to Dr. Lee Merritt. Again, you can check her out on brighteon.tv, Merritt Medical Hour, and her website. You can obviously get a lot of information there, a lot of there's resources there that you probably haven't been able to find other places. DrLeeMerritt.com. So I'm throwing this back to you, Lee, that a lot of people in the medical community maybe been duped to think this was a coincidence that all of a sudden these diseases shot up, the death rate shot up, and all these other things. And they're not allowing us to say, wait a minute, this is just common sense. You're looking at some of these charts and graphs, and they're saying, no, don't believe your eyes. So let me hear your professional opinion on the fact that I don't believe it was coincidental. And I don't think you do either.
No. And that's, they don't use the term coincidence theory, but that's what they're believing in. Now, J. Edgar Hoover said the individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. Now, I think J. Edgar Hoover would know, the founder of the FBI. He was behind closed doors. He got the big picture. And FDR said, nothing happens in politics by accident. If it happened, it was planned that way. So again, these are not me saying this. I'm actually proud of my tinfoil hat and being a conspiracy theorist, because as you said, we've been proven right. Mm-hmm. And the point here is that it's just unbelievable that you can talk this away. If this were 30 years ago in medical circles, whether you're doing a group get together over the Journal of American Medicine or whatever, and talking about stuff, you would accept this data. But suddenly, it's all just coincidence. You're not looking at things that are just kicking you in the face. For example, the average change in mortality, and we know this from the guys that really know this stuff. It's not the physicians, It's the actuaries, the people that look at death counts, and they can tell you that there's a little wobble, little variable year to year, and it's usually about 0.1%. It is not very much by year, because we're looking at big populations over a long period of time. So when the state of Indiana actuaries came up that they had one, I think it was 2022, they noticed a 40% increase in mortality overall. Wow. All-cause mortality, that's huge. Mm-hmm. Children, we're seeing numbers up into 30% in certain young age groups. Now, that's a huge demographic problem, much more than if your 85-year-olds are dying 30% more than normal. That's one thing. But when you start seeing young people dying at these high rates, it's unbelievable. We've lost over 10 or 11 soccer teams, professional soccer teams, after the vaccine. Now, you can say it's not from the vaccine, but again, the university guys that are supposed to be doing this stuff, looking at this stuff, they apparently weren't. We have all these preventive medicine people and all this epidemiologists and sports medicine doctors, okay? I went back and looked at the numbers of FIFA, the professional soccer organization, to look at how many people die every year. And they don't have a total number, but they have an on-field death number. And what you will see, anybody can do this, doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure this out. You go back and they go from 1889 to present, right? From 1889 until 1999, 110 years, the average death on the soccer field was 0 to 3. And it was rarely heart attack. It was running into somebody, having the goalpost fall over on you. Lightning strikes. I'm surprised how lightning is a big risk factor to soccer players. I didn't know that. Or football if you're in Europe. So anyway, 0 to 3. It rarely went over. Okay. I looked at every year. And then in 1999, something changed. From 1999, from 2000 until 2020, it went from 0 to 3 to 3 to 10. But now it was all cardiac. Now that alone, what I'm saying is that should have triggered somebody in preventive epidemiology or whatever to have noticed this. The soccer league doctors, I mean, did nobody notice? But see, it happened so gradually and they'd never, but that's what happened around 1999 is when all these kids started getting all these childhood vaccines and they started getting the flu vaccine regularly. I think that's one of the factors here. I can't prove it, but something changed. And then when we get to 2021, and by the way, 2020, we didn't see the death on field. They started having the vaccine in 2021, and that year it was over 25 deaths on the field. I don't know what it is now, but it went orders of magnitude up. And you just can't keep talking these things away.
Yeah. Pull up that graph, the excess mortality by detailed age band, and this is in the New American article. If you go to quarter three in 2021, look at that, Dr. Lee Merritt. It went from 131% up to jumped to 178, and then the next one, the age range 35 to 44, jumped to 200%. So what you're saying is it was gradual, but then you have these numbers that seem to spike.
Right. And one of the things that is not even probably as bad as it really is, because you see, the problem is now you're looking at all ages and you're also looking at a progressive, as you see, why is it 100? In other words, why in 2020 is it, 103%, for example, or 114%? Well, because we didn't start vaccinating people in 2021. We started vaccinating people in 1789, and we've just been ramping it up and ramping it up. And in 2000, like I say, we really started ramping it up. So when you look at these numbers, we have to say all of these vaccines are toxic, probably, and especially the flu vaccine. That one we can guarantee is toxic. It's the number one payout in the government pay thing. Well, so there's a ramp up of all this mortality over just didn't start in 2021, but it was a big jump in 2021. I'll tell you one that's very impressive. There was a guy, he's in New Zealand, and I think he is a Pfizer employee. It's been a while since I thought about this, but this just came out this last year. And he looked at the numbers. He was tasked with looking at the numbers of these by vaccine lot, right? And he discovered, he said, the reason that he sees this is because in such a small country as New Zealand, unlike America or China or someplace else where they have multiple people doing this job, he's the only guy. So all the data came to him and he just couldn't help but see this. So he started really looking at mortality per batch. And he found that the worst batch of the Pfizer vaccine had a 21% mortality. 21%.
Wow.
That is one out of every five people that took that vaccine died or had a serious complication. I mean, you can't just ignore that. And that wasn't the only batch. I mean, he has very good numbers and is no longer employed with them.
Well, of course. Really quick, you wrote an article back in July of 2021 at the New American called COVID-19 Vaccines, A Cure Worse Than the Disease. And really quick, since you brought that up, Dr. Lee Merritt, I want to bring up one of the charts in there. Safe and effective countries that used hydroxychloroquine had much lower death rates than those countries that restricted it. But in Israel, I want to jump ahead in your article. We'll put this in the notes so people can access it because it got me riled up all over again. You wrote this in 2021. In Israel, in the over 65-year-olds, vaccination resulted in death from COVID 40 times more than unvaccinated people. Yeah. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of updated stats since this, because this was 3 years ago, but you were trying to expose all this and you were censored.
Oh, yeah. No, I tried to publish that paper in a medical journal in February, no, in March of 2021. That would have made a difference. Not only did it not get published in a medical journal right away, but it didn't even get a look at because it came back too quickly. This was like bounced back so fast it couldn't have even been seen by the peer-reviewed journal people.
Wow.
So, but what was easy to see back then was I looked at the VAERS data. That's what this paper's about. I looked at the VAERS data because this started with an I started noticing this OBGYN doctor, 56-year-old guy in Florida, took one dose of the Pfizer vaccine and was dead in 2 weeks of a brain bleed. And they said he had thrombocytopenia. Now, as a physician, I can just tell you that is such an odd story. It deserves looking at. Where are the CDC, right? So because we know about thrombocytopenia, idiopathic thrombocytopenia, and we know that most of the time you can keep people alive by giving them platelets. This is a lack of platelets. Well, but for some reason, this guy died in his own hospital. Not that we don't treat everybody to the max, but trust me, if you're a physician in your own hospital, you got into the system quickly, you got the immediate quick look, and you got taken care of by all the specialists. And he still died within 2 weeks. Now, that says something. And so then I started looking around and I found news reports, even though the medical people weren't reporting it, there were news reports from all over the world. There were over 30 of them at that time of this exact story. So I said, wait a minute. So then I went to the VAERS. Now, then there were only 7,000 additions. There were only 7,000 entries into the VAERS. It was easy to search. And yet it was so dramatic to see how many bleeding cases there were and bleeding everywhere. It wasn't just in the brain or it was sometimes the eye. It was sometimes bleeding out all over the place. I mean, it was all over the place. Thrombocytopenia, leukemia, bleeding, menstrual bleeding abnormalities, you name it. It was all over the place. So I had some help. I put together this paper. I thought it was pretty well put together. I showed all the data. I showed the tables. I didn't massage anything, sent it in, could not even get anybody to look at it because you see, they didn't want. Now, why was the VAERS? They had all these, again, when you talk about coincidence, they had all these rules against why, it's self-reported. Oh, it doesn't really mean anything. No, the VAERS was set up to prevent just this. It was set up as a tripwire. It was not meant to be the definitive word. It was meant to alert people to a problem that's unusual. So we didn't let it get out the door. We didn't let it run off with us, but we didn't listen.
And unfortunately, we've got to end on that note because I hope our audience I know has learned and has seen and has been more informed than the average maybe American that have bought the hype from Hollywood and the Biden administration, who, by the way, what do? They set up an office of pandemic preparedness and response. So they're on the vaccines forever bandwagon. And I know what you feel about that. Dr. Lee Merritt, we will have to have you back at some point. And there's so much more to talk about. But thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Appreciate all your work. And thanks for the articles that at least we can share with people that didn't get a chance to see them back when they came out. Very insightful. God bless you and keep doing the work that you're doing. All right, guys, we appreciate you sharing the podcast. This one may get censored on certain platforms, so we encourage you to share it and help us get it out there. God bless you, and as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.